welcome to the Hot on Hoops podcast. This is the NBA Finals Game 3 preview. We got a fellow writer, Diego Quesada, with me. What's up, man?
It's going good. It's going good.
Yeah, I just got back from practice. Both teams were practicing on the main floor. It was kind of awkward. They had like 30 minutes for you to get, you know, B-roll if you wanted to shoot them, you know, just practicing. But there's just so many people. It's just the coverage has been crazy, and I just wonder. The Heat players have gone through this, but with the Thunder, I mean, it's just a huge media presence. What do you think as far as the experience that the Heat got last year and the Thunder, you know, first time here, maybe they're just happy to be there. They're going to play, you know, well and everything, but do you think that that has any bearing on the finals when they actually play?
Well, here's the thing about that. I think a lot of people said after the Thunder beat the Spurs four straight times that they had grown up and that they were really ready. I thought that they were very much a worthy opponent, and I didn't think at all that they were just happy to be there, as you said. But I will say this, and I think if the Heat win the championship, people will still say the Thunder had a successful season because they did advance from getting out of the Western Conference Finals last year, lost in five games, and they went to the finals. So if they lose, it's still considered a successful year. People will say they're still young. They will get better. They will have Harden and Ibaka there for at least one more season. But if the Heat lose, then you will all go back to all the discussion about the, do you break up the big three? Do you fire Eric Spoelstra, et cetera, et cetera. We all know because we all heard it when the Heat were down 3-2 to the Boston Celtics. So in that aspect, I do think that the lack of experience of the Thunder comes in, but it's only if the Heat win the championship as opposed to if the Heat lose a championship. Then, as I said, I think you'll get those, you know, those that speculation of whether the Heat should just blow it up, but I don't think you would see that at all if the Thunder lost. But, you know, like I said, I do think that they are ready to win a championship, and it's just up to the Heat to play better than them in these next, you know, 3 to 5 games that we have left in the season.
Okay, so how do they consistently, you know, play like they did in Game 2, but they have to avoid that second half collapses? Did the Heat win Game 2, or did they just not lose it?
Well, I think they won. I'll tell you what, I think a lot of these people who ask these questions in the post-game press conferences, I really think some of them are asking kind of just not very intelligent questions. I think somebody asked Coach Spo after Game 2, do you feel lucky to come out with a win considering you only won the first quarter? I mean, I just thought...
That was an Oklahoma City reporter.
I mean, that to me makes no sense. I mean, you're talking about, are you lucky to win a game that you were that you led wire to wire?
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. The Thunder have come back from 13-point or more deficits in each round of the playoffs against Dallas, against the Lakers, and against the Spurs, and even in Game 1 against the Heat. So you have to know that in that arena especially, but even in Miami, they're going to make runs. And they didn't really make their run until the fourth quarter. In the first three quarters, usually, you know, they would get it down to 10 or 8 points, and then Battier would make a three, and just to restore order. So I was not surprised that the Thunder came back to cut the lead all the way down. But I would just say that I didn't like when the Heat got up by 7 with 53 seconds left. And
The Wade turnover?
Yeah. Well, not only that, but also right after the timeout, it took Kevin Durant all of 3 seconds to get a score on, you know, who I would say is the best perimeter defender in the league. I think that James he got caught a little bit off guard. I also think he got caught off guard on the play that some people are saying he should have been called for a foul to tie the game up. So I would just say that I know that they're going to make their run, but I would have liked to see the Heat, when you're up 7 with 53 seconds left, do not let Kevin Durant score in 3 seconds and don't turn the ball over.
Definitely. Those are the ways you're going to have to win those kind of games because, like you said, the Thunder, they can score in bunches. They're athletic, but they can score very quickly. That's the thing. They can just score in a matter of seconds, even though they're primarily a jump shooting team, but they're not. They don't exactly play like the Mavericks play with Jason Kidd handling the ball and Dirk taking the majority of the jumpers. Yeah. Harden scored as well at the end of the first half.
Yeah, he was keeping them in the game.
Single-handedly, pretty much. Yeah. And then you have Durant that is, you know, he's going to hit. He's good for two or three out of nowhere type shots where you didn't even see it coming seconds before. He has such a quick release. And I don't know if there's the, I don't know exactly where statistics are as far as the field goal shooting percentage in the last two or three minutes of a game. Yeah. But it seems like he makes all of them. Yes. And what also another thing was the Heat were taking their eyes off of him, trying to help out another defender. You just cannot do that. You have to resist the urge.
Yeah, I mean, the Heat also have been caught up in that whole, you know, problem through the last 2 years when the Heat played the Boston Celtics, helping off of the guy who was supposed to be guarding Ray Allen. And you have to know whether it's KD or Ray Allen. Those are two dead-eye shooters, and you cannot, under any circumstances, leave them open.
No, you can't. What other adjustments can the Heat make so that they can, you know, keep a lead and not let it come to this in the second half? For me personally, I think the offense gets stuck a lot. In the first half, we see very free-flowing game, three or four touches easily. They find a player that has the best look to the basket, and they're very effective. And then the second half comes around. As time goes by, invariably, you see LeBron just, you know, dribbling outside the arc. Everybody just kind of just standing around looking at him, seeing what he's going to do with it. Sometimes it works out and he comes up with something. But a lot of the times you just feel like the shot clock ran out and they really didn't do enough, the entire team, to get the best look at the basket.
Yeah, as far as the adjustments that the Heat can make, one thing I would point out was that Bosch had 10 points and 10 boards in the first half of game two. And then in the third quarter, he didn't even attempt a shot. I know that he didn't score any, but I think that in the third quarter of that game, and the Heat were able to mostly keep their lead where it was going into the half. You had, I think James had the first 8 points of the quarter. Wade made a few buckets, and then it just sort of went on from there. But I think when the Thunder have both Kendrick Perkins and Serge Ibaka in the game, and you would have Perkins guard Bosch, I think you have to exploit that matchup because that is one matchup that the Heat can really expose in this series, and I think they already have done a good job of exposing it. But if you just keep on going to Bosch in the early moments of the first quarter and in the third quarter, you can really get some points out of Bosch because he can just, I mean, I think in one first quarter play in game two, he just pump faked on Perkins and then went into the basket and got a trip to the foul line. I mean, that's what you want when you have a slower, you know, plotting guy defend Chris Bosch. So that is one area that I think that he should sort of clean up. But, I mean, I don't know if Scotty Brooks is going to change his lineup. I think we saw some of these same questions after game two of the Western Conference Finals, and he didn't change his starting lineup. And I think one of the aspects of this series is that both of these coaches are pretty headstrong. They are pretty stubborn, and I think we have to see if Scotty Brooks is going to change his lineup because I just don't think that this is the series for Perkins. I think that they got him to beat the Lakers, which was the team that had gotten that had gone to the finals three straight times, winning two championships. But against the Heat, he's not really all that useful. Even when he does grab an offensive board, I mean, what is he going to do? Turn the ball over or miss a layup? I mean, he's just not all that useful.
No, he's only scored a few points in each game. I think the first game, 4 points. I think actually in both games he scored 4 points. So he hasn't been very effective. We've seen that, of course. He really hasn't had much of an impact in the game. And Ibaka, he didn't have any blocks the first game. The second game, though, he had 5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I did see Bosch and LeBron adjust to that, kind of give him a pump fake real quick,
yeah,
just get him off his feet, and that led to really easy baskets. Because mm-hmm. if it's not for Ibaka, they really don't have that kind of inside force that they had seen against the Pacers and the Celtics. When the Thunder are playing good defense, it's a team-wide defense, and they're kind of shutting off lanes. But I've seen LeBron and Wade, once they can do that penetration, initial penetration, they haven't received too much resistance at the rim. Apart from Ibaka, and a few moments from Perkins, Cephalosha has been good defensively, but it hasn't really been the kind of defense that they at least saw against the Celtics.
Mm.
Moving on. The play of Shane Battier has been...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody could have predicted that. It didn't matter what statistic or probability or in any sort of way could you predict how good he's been shooting lately for the Heat. Really didn't have anything like that this entire season from Shane. But that's kind of the reason why they brought him in initially to be that kind of kind of guy. And now you're finally seeing it here, but I don't think anybody really thought that he'd be moved into the starting lineup either. I think you just thought, okay, he's going to get his moments. But at the same time, you're also dealing with Mike Miller that he can't really give you much anymore.
Yeah.
So the Heat really needed Shane to step up, mm-hmm. and he did. What are your initial thoughts of his role in the first two games?
Well, I think he is really being a nice safety valve in the offense when he spots up for three and makes those shots. I mean, he even had a huge bank shot in the fourth quarter that was in the midst of a Thunder run, and the Heat just made, and I think Battier made that to, I think, move the lead from 4-7. So that was a huge shot that he made. It was lucky that it went in because it was a bank shot. But I also think, and I know some, and just to make one more point on Battier, is I know that some people will talk about how in game two, it was James who was the primary defender on KD as opposed to game one, and that's true. But I think one thing that people are underrating about Battier is that when James would pick up, I think it was his second foul in the second quarter or his third foul in the third quarter, not really in foul trouble, but in danger of picking up one more foul so that you would have to sit down. It was Shane Battier who switched on to him and did a pretty good job in those limited opportunities. I mean, I don't think that Battier is good enough to hang with KD. I think you have to match him up with James, but I think that's another aspect of the game that people aren't really talking about. When LeBron James was in danger of getting into foul trouble with one more foul, he switched on to him for a few minutes here and there and really helped out the Heat. And he's helping out the Heat on both sides of the court, and I think that's what you need.
Speaking of foul trouble, what did you think of the no call? Or not no call, actually. It was a block on Shane that would have been Durant's sixth foul. What are your thoughts about that? Because people aren't really talking about that. They're talking about what he did afterwards, and maybe he shouldn't have even been playing.
Yeah, that's true. I know some people, you know, say when you have James basically kind of put his arm on KD's thigh when he was going up for that shot to tie the game with 10 seconds left, people say that that should have been a foul, but people will also say, well, he shouldn't have been on the court because he fouled out in that circumstance. I mean, I think you do see superstars get the benefit of the doubt a lot of the time. And I think that was one of those instances where KD had five fouls. He picked up his fifth foul, I think, very early in the fourth quarter. They were in OKC, and they just said, we're going to keep him in the game. I honestly think that that could have easily been a charge call. But, I mean, we could go back and forth with missed calls because there are plenty of missed calls in any NBA game, especially in the finals. So I basically say that you could say that it could have been a charge, but I think you just have to take the game as it's called and just live with what happened. And I really liked what KD said after the game. I mean, people were really asking him, you know, do you think you got fouled? He just said, I missed the shot. And you just have to live with the results of what the referee does. I mean, if he gets fouled out, then you have to, you know, take a deep breath because you obviously, well, not take a deep breath, but like exhale a bit because that's their best player getting off the court. But you also have to know that superstars get called in those moments. That I think that's why you saw when Jordan blatantly pushed off on Byron Russell in the 98 finals, you know, he didn't get the call. And, you know, it's just, I think you can make an argument. But as far as the officiating goes, I mean, you could also say, like I said, the Heat got in the bonus. Or, I'm sorry, the Thunder got in the bonus
just a few minutes into the quarter.
So, I mean, like I said,
there were, like, perimeter fouls, too, right?
Those were the fouls that, you know, the Heat, I think, you know, KD was trying to fight for position on the three-point line, and then I think, you know, they just called it, which, you know, wasn't a foul call in some games against the New York series when the Heat were trying to guard Carmelo Anthony. But, I mean, like I said, you just take the referees, what they do. If they make a bad call here or there, you just have to go out and win the game despite what the referees do. And I think you cannot blame the referees. You have to overcome bad calls. You have to just play with the calls that are made. You just have to play with the calls that are made, because if you say something, they're not going to change their call.
Yeah, and superstars, it evens out too, because sometimes the stars don't get the calls at late games. You've seen LeBron's sixth foul. That could have been either a no call. I mean, it was mm-hmm. a debatable call. Or you see also Kevin Garnett also getting called for an illegal screen at the end of one of the yep. Celtics games against the Sixers. So sometimes it happens in crunch time. Sometimes it doesn't. And I think in this case, it was a foul. But even still, you would think that Durant could make that shot anyway. He was so close to the rim. So he got lucky there.
Yeah.
And luck also plays a part in any championship run. So there's been a couple of things that have definitely gone the Heat's way. But I'm also in that camp that says, don't go down by that many points, and it comes to something like that at the end of a game at home. So I think I'll stay in that camp. Mm-hmm. And you can't obsess over those the referee the Oklahoma City journalist that asked that to Durant said that, don't you think you got mugged at the end of the game? And that's when Durant responded again with that, like, I just missed a shot. So I think that's a healthy, at least it's in public, view of that from Durant. I like that maturity from him. Mm-hmm. He's not the one to be complaining constantly to the officials during a game.
No.
So I applaud them for that. I think after the, especially the Pacers series where they were pretty chippy, the players. And also talking about that with the media, even Vogel's comments too. So I think it's kind of refreshing to see the Thunder not using that as an excuse, but also seeing some criticism on their end as well with Russell Westbrook. I thought it was a little too negative, to be honest with you. I think Magic Johnson saying that was the worst finals performance of any point guard, I think that's pretty harsh, considering that we're just a year away from the Mike Bibby experience in the finals. So you don't have to look that far back to see a worse performance. And today in practice, Durant said something that was true. You know, if it wasn't for Westbrook's performance through the whole playoffs, they wouldn't even be here. So they're standing behind them. They obviously are not going to think of that either. Do you think that criticism towards Westbrook is justified?
I don't think it's justified. I think in both games he's had slow starts, but he's played well in the second halves of both games. I mean, I think you saw in game two, he made a big put back off of a KD miss at the rim to, I think, get it down to 3 or 5 points or something like that. I think, but, you know, I think if you're judging it from the Heat's perspective, he shot 10 for 24 in game one and shot 10 for 26 in game two. So you live with that if you're the Heat. But I do think that the criticism is overboard. I think he is a very athletic player. We've seen that he can get a step on Wade whenever he wants to. He's a great player, and the Heat will have to defend him very well. I don't know how we'll play in Miami, though, but we have to see that. But I do agree with you that the criticism is overboard. Instead of maybe talking about Westbrook and what he did here and there, maybe they should talk about how the team collectively just didn't have that sense of urgency to start the game. I just don't know what happened, because we saw them have this slow start in game one, which some people are saying that maybe it was just nerves. But in game two, I mean, they just came out really just not – I just don't know what was going on. And I think you would expect after, you know, getting off to a slow start in game six – of the Western Conference Finals, getting off to a slow start in game one, they would do something to correct that. But they didn't. And as a result of that, the Heat have pretty much led. I think I read something yesterday that said the Heat have led in this finals for all but 12 minutes and 16 seconds. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we have to see if they can come back from these huge deficits without that OKC crowd behind them.
And you've seen the Heat with the slow starts mm-hmm. more than a few times during their run to the finals, and then all of a sudden you see this, and on the road no less. You would think that the Thunder could not struggle. I mean, they kind of looked lost in a lot of those possessions, and it's surprising to see them, especially at home, doing that. And you could call. You could just recall the last series when you thought that the Thunder don't have as much experience as the other team does. It really didn't matter when the Thunder were on their game; they can beat anybody. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's going to be pretty tough for the Heat to win three straight at home. That would be four straight against the Thunder. But seeing how well they did in Oklahoma City, if they can win two out of the next three and have two chances to win one game in Oklahoma City, the Heat will definitely take that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said in the preview podcast. I said, because since the NBA has gone to the 2-3-2 format in 1985, only twice has the team at home won those three games. And it was the 04 Pistons and the 06 Heat. So you're obviously... it's going to be very difficult to get all three. You'd love to get them, obviously, and win the championship on your home floor. But I think that the Heat should just take it one game at a time. And I said in the preview podcast, the formula for the Heat is to get one of the first two, which they did, win two of the three at home, and then close it out in game six. I mean, you can, I guess, lose game six and then close it out in game seven. But, I mean, I think they'd all like to get it done in six as opposed to seven. So I just think that they should take it one game at a time. I think game three, that's to me, is a very big game, because whichever team loses game three will be really backed up against the wall, because you do not want to go down 3-1.
No, not at all. And as the series progresses with the Thunder, you see that they have Harden, of course. That is, uh-huh. I mean, who wouldn't want him on the bench? But after that, you're getting good minutes from Nick Collison, I think. I think especially in game one.
Yeah.
He played well, but even in the second game he gave you good minutes. I think Fisher has been pretty solid for them as well. After that though, it's really just a 7 or 8 man rotation. So they kind of have to live and die with, even if they took Perkins out of the starting lineup, like you were suggesting, they don't have a whole lot of talent to count on. So it's kind of just really up to those core guys to get it done. And well, you know, of course, it remains to be seen how they'll respond to playing in Miami. So the final thing to discuss: do you think the coaching battle? Do you think it's been a clear case of Spo out coaching Brooks, or you still think, you know, Brooks is definitely a solid coach and he still has a few tricks up his sleeve and he can make those proper adjustments for these road games?
Well, I think that you saw in the Western Conference Finals, Brooks didn't really start to make his adjustments And until game three, but I think maybe part of that had to do with the fact that they were going on at home. So, I mean, as I said, if you're the team without home court advantage, you're satisfied with the split. So maybe he just didn't feel that his team was in need of making a whole lot of adjustments after they lost game one to the Spurs. But then maybe he thought, oh, now we're down 0-2. I really have to do something. But I think we have seen Brooks just not... I don't know if it's him or the players, but if I was coaching the Thunder after game one, just after game one, I would have definitely did something to address Shane Battier's shooting,
mm-hmm.
and the Heat and then it was the same thing in game two. Like I said, I do think that they should change their starting lineup. I think that Nick Collison only had 14 minutes in game two. I think that should go up and Perkins should come down. But as you said, I mean, they don't really have a lot on their bench because their bench is basically Harden, Fisher, and Collison. And we all know that Daquan Cook had a little bit of run in game one. But, I mean, I don't know what you can expect out of him, although he can get hot. But I just don't know if he's going to be on the court for that long. So I would say that area, the Perkins area, I think... he should bring Perkins off the bench because he's just not getting it done. And I think as far as the Heat, I think Spo has made some good moves. Like I said, I think having Battier and Bosch in the starting lineup is better than having Bosch and Haslam. The Heat are going with one big man for pretty much the entire 48 minutes of this of this finals, and I think that's a good idea. I think I mentioned in the preview podcast how Joel Anthony could have a role, but I actually have come to, you know, maybe he doesn't, because if the Heat put Joel Anthony in the game, then it gives Perkins somebody to guard, and he won't get exposed. But if you put him on Bosch, like as I said, Bosch is just too quick for him. He'll drive right by him, so you can expose him. But if Joel Anthony is in the game, I think, you know, although he does give you that shot blocking that you could probably say that a big man on your team offers, you have to also deal with the fact that on the other end of the floor, you are basically playing 4-on-5 and you give Perkins somebody to guard without being exposed, as I just said. So I do think after these first two games, Spo has outcoached Brooks. But I think you could have also said easily in the first two games of the Western Conference Finals that Greg Popovich just really outcoached Brooks. And then I think he just sort of kind of outsmarted himself when he started playing his starters big minutes, shrinking his rotation, which was his biggest strength. So I guess the message is that Spo has done a good job of making some adjustments in the first few games, but we have to see how the teams adjust in these, you know, next couple games to see who really does come out on top in the coaching battle.
Well, that about wraps it up for another How Did Hoops podcast, NBA Finals edition. Thanks for coming on board with me, Diego. And we're going to be doing these after every game. Hopefully we can get another guest or two to join us for the next one. Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. See ya.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye.